you consider yourself a spiritual person?
Well, I don't really understand the point of the question. I consider myself a moral person.
Do you believe in God?
As a scientist, I rely on empirical evidence, and in this matter, I don't believe that there is data either way.
So your answer would in fact be that you don't believe in God?
I don't understand the relevance of the question.
95% of the world's population believes in a supreme being in one form or another. Question more than relevant.
And welcome back after the long weekend. It's Reese on the Radio right here live on blogtalkradio.com. It is September the 4th, 2012. Welcome back. I hope you had a great Labor Day weekend. I did nothing. It was quiet. I did nothing. I saw nothing. I talked to no one. I kept a very, very low profile. Now, if you hear some noises in the background, folks, what you are hearing in the background is C-SPAN, because I don't want to miss a beat during the Democratic National Convention, and nor should you. Nobody should be missing this convention. No one should miss it. Now, most of the people who are supporting Mitt Romney are watching it. Republican National Convention. They watched it last week. Of course they did. They're out there supporting their party. There are some people out there who are watching it or didn't care to. They don't want to know about the platform. You know those people, the zealots of the Democratic Party. But all Republicans are attached to their TV screens right now. That's the whole idea. Conservatives are making sure that they are right on the pulse of this Democratic National Convention. Because you must know what it is that your enemies are doing. So that's the reason why I've got it on in the background. And if you hear it in the background, that's the noise that you hear. No matter what. I'm going to have that on for the next 2 days. Now, I'll be honest with you. I'm not exactly certain what I'm going to do as far as tomorrow's concerned. Because, sorry folks, I may not do a Reese on the Radio tomorrow at 8 o'clock. Some of you might be wondering why not. What's up with taking the vacations and crap? Well, here's why. It's goddamn football season starting tomorrow. And the Giants, the defending Super Bowl champions, are playing the Dallas Cowboys in a division game. And I might need to watch that. I might need to sit down, crack a few brews, and sit back and watch some football. Football is finally here. It's been a six-month drought. You have no idea what my Sundays have been like without it. So I'm really, really, I'm caught. And I do my show at night. Maybe I should do the show at 6 o'clock as opposed to 8 o'clock. Maybe I'll change the show from 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock, and I'll do 2 hours then, and then I'll get to watch the game. Maybe I'll do that. I could, quite possible, but we'll decide. I'll let everybody know. You can follow me on Facebook, of course. It's Reese on the Radio. But I've got plenty of things that I got to bring up about the Democrats because we're just underway. So there's not much that's going to happen until Michelle Obama gets out there, which will happen sometime around 10:30 tonight. And I've got to see what this broad's going to say, our First Lady, for all those who might think that's offensive. I call every female broad. Get over it. The women I don't like, I use the word bitch. And I don't care. It's no war on women. See, I'll say Sandra Fluck, bitch. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, bitch. Stephanie Cutter, bitch. Nancy Pelosi, old bitch. But other people who I don't have any huge beef with, Michelle Obama, First Lady, broad. Hillary Clinton, broad. In fact, there's only one time when I ever referred to her as a bitch, and that was in the description that others were giving of her. But I've never referred to her as a bitch. I've always referred to her as a broad. But you know who those women are, the ones I call bitch. And I mean it. I move on. There's not much to give on. In fact, you know what? I'm watching these clown-ass Negroes who at the Democratic National Convention, C-SPAN is making sure that every shot has got some Negro in a funny hat. They do not understand what it is that they're doing to the average Negro today. Every Negro's in a funny hat. The funny glasses. Looking like you have the bosses. I'm offended. They just did a thing with Ted Kennedy. I couldn't stop laughing. Calling him a protector of women. Unless, of course, they're in his car at the Chappaquiddick. That's just me. Oh, no, actually, that's not just me. That's everybody. Oh, crap, Method Jesse is there. Method Jesse is walking through the crowds. Yes, and he's smiling. Yazza Boston. Method Jesse Jackson. Ha-ha! I can't believe he's there. Look at him. He is so happy to be there. People are crowding around him. They are so excited to see, Method Jesse. Anyway, so there's plenty to get into today. We've got to talk about God. For all you non-believers out there, I don't care if you don't believe in God. That's your business. I just find it odd that the Democrats took it off their party platform. They took Jerusalem off the party platform today. They got a beef with that. We've got plenty of other audio that we need to share. Now, I don't know where my producer is. He's nowhere to be found. He's somewhere around here. I haven't heard from him yet. But maybe he'll call in. Maybe he'll join the show. Probably because he didn't know I was doing the show. I haven't called him all weekend. Everybody was doing their own thing this weekend. How did you celebrate your empty chair day? But you know the number. You know how to contact us. It's 347-308-8701. I'm going to be riding solo for a little while until Mary, why you bugging joins us. She'll be in the house soon. And we'll talk about more of what it is that's going on at the Democratic National Convention as it unfolds. If we see something, folks, I promise you we will jip it. Join it in progress. We will definitely jip it. We have to. I'm seeing some of these people. I'm not excited about the people that they're bringing out. I have no idea who these people are. I'm looking at some of them. I'm not excited about any one of them. I'm thinking that somebody out there is going to be a firebrand, come out there and say something that's going to be absolutely explosive. I've heard nothing. Who is this guy? He looks familiar to me. Is it the Virginia guy? This guy looks like he's from Virginia. What the Chiron's not working at C-SPAN. There he is. Oh, no, he's the mayor of Minneapolis. Okay, he's a nobody. Ryback. He's a nobody. Irrelevant. Absolutely irrelevant. This is what's going to happen today. Now, folks, I've got a treat for you. Folks, I have a treat for you today. A long, long, long sought after piece of audio that I have been trying to find for some 5 years. Has finally turned up. Now, I don't know whether or not any of you have heard it. And if you have, fine, you'll hear it again. But it's been a while. I've been searching for it. A friend of mine, Pooch, DJ Pooch, out in Philadelphia, he's really kind of New Jersey, Philadelphia area. He has the audio. I gave it to him a long time ago. He saved it many, many moons ago. Found it. Got it to me. In fact, I'm almost certain the last time I heard this audio was 6 years ago. But he found it. And I think it's only right that I play it tonight. Because I want to pay homage. I want to pay homage to my fine white woman. It's only right that I do so. To at least show her my love and respect. And to all the white women of the world, that this black Republican knows that if it ain't white, it ain't right. And if it's black, it's whack. Call me a radical, like I care. But like I said before, If it ain't white, it ain't right. And if it's black, it's whack. So I must pay homage to my fine white women across the globe, anywhere and everywhere. We must, and we shall, respect them. So here for you, if you're listening, enjoy it, is Reese on the Radio with his little brother Briggs and the song, Fine White Women.
As a crossover Negro never got much play. From a fine brown sugar ever walking my way, it would remind me as a child what my mama would say.
If Shantae don't want your number, better call
Emily. So I figured out exactly just what had to be done. But could I walk with a white woman without having to run? No more dating gangster bitches walking around with a gun. Find a woman with good credit, finally have me some fun. Now some black girls might think I'm talking to you. It's just a slight misunderstanding.
Now are you lying? It's true.
Alright, it is what it is. Now what's a brother to do? So you know what I'm looking for now when I'm out with my crew.
Now where my fine white women in the party all night.
We're here, baby.
Hold it down, keep it tight. Regulating women, sisters ain't acting right.
Just put it on me, daddy.
That's right. Now where my fine white women in the party all night.
We're here, baby.
Hold it down, keep it tight. Regulating women, sisters ain't acting right.
And my race would be so damn hard. Foster brothers who start searching for alternatives. Found a white girl and her accent was affirmative. A fine European princess.
Who would have guessed?
With fine strength, blonde hair.
Silicone breast.
A vegetarian queen dressed all conservatives. No artificial food flavors or preservatives. My white woman never gets me upset. Never giving me a story like behind on the rent. Don't have to worry about insurance if the ride got a dent. When she knows I'm in the mood, she quick to have that I spent. My fine white dime always sweet and bubbly. Never thought, just Caucasian and lovely.
Jennifer's dating who? A black guy? Oh my god.
Now when my fine white women in the party all night.
We're here, baby.
Hold it down, keep it tight. Regulating women, sisters ain't acting right.
Put it on me, daddy.
That's right. Now when my fine white women in the party all night.
We're here, baby.
Hold it down, keep it tight. Regulating women, sisters ain't acting right.
Put it on me, daddy.
That's right.
Now with my sweet white women out in hack and sack. If you got silicone breasts, then that ass is slack. Here to put me on the right path, keep a brother winning. No one understands a black man struggle like white women. You black chicks ain't nothing but gold diggers. You don't care what we look like, that's why you dig jigger. It don't matter if my pockets stay small or grow bigger. All you bum do rag bitches ain't seeing one figure. Don't be surprised if I walk up tapping ya. It's just for you to move to see the white girl walking in. That's why you acting all stuck on my boys are laughing at you. Why these white women are treating us like kings from Africa.
Have a great time tonight, honey. Oh, do you need cash? Oh, why don't you take $300? Oh, no, how about $500? Oh, do you want to take my gold card? Or, oh, no, just take my platinum. Anyway, Sue, would you rather take the Benz or do you want to take the Lexus? I think it has more room. Oh, no, you don't have to call me. Just have a great, great time with you and your friends at the strip club.
Now, when my fine white women in the party all night.
We're here, baby.
Hold it down, keep it tight. Regulating women, sisters ain't acting right.
Put it on me, daddy.
That's right. Now, when my fine white women in the party all night.
Are you tired of government picking favorites in business? Is red tape making it impossible for you to earn a living? When private businesses collude with the government to exclude competition, you get cronyism. How do you get rid of it? You can try passing laws, but that only covers up the problem. There's a better solution.
Hi, Willie Bays here with another fantastic product, Crony Clean, the spray that breaks down cronyism by breaking down government bureaucracy. Normal products attack the side effects of cronyism by passing more laws and business regulations, but Crony Clean is different. It targets the root cause of cronyism, too much government. Using proven political science, Crony Clean eliminates the government influence on business, giving everyone the right to make a living. No more concentrated benefits, no more dispersed costs. America! Why waste your time and money fighting an uphill battle against special interest groups? With Crony Clean, you have the power to fight. Crony Clean can be applied to restore economic liberty, property rights, the First Amendment, and much more. Order now and receive Crony Clean for the unbelievable price of nothing. Just pay fewer taxes. But wait, there's more. Call in the next 20 minutes and you'll receive a free gift, the Dollar Deflator.
It forms a strong barrier to protect your dollar savings from inflation.
Keep America free by keeping the government out of businesses. Order now.
Offer not available in Washington, D.C. and surrounding areas. Side effects may include more economic freedom, jobs, less corruption, and improved quality of life. If you're a politician or lobbyist, please consult your doctor before using Crony Clean. Order today.
I'm actually quite proud of the Democrats for making Republicans face their position on abortion. And want to say thanks to you liberals for proving my point that these so-called Republicans can't run from social issues. Because liberals are always going to try to raise the issue just as sure as they'll try to raise taxes.
I think what's happening. Propaganda.
If there's one thing that bugs me like leaving cheese off my cheeseburger, it's when Republicans are dismissive about social issues. Haven't y'all learned by now that liberals play to the selfishness and the self-righteousness of people? And at the top of selfish and self-righteous things to play to is abortion. Oh, I'm sorry, reproductive choices. Oh, no, wait. Now it's healthcare choices. That's right, Democrats are trying to call abortion a healthcare choice. And then try to tell the people that tax-funded abortions are not in Obama's health care bill, yet at the same time believe that abortions should be taxpayer-funded. Democrats walk in a circle of deception. So, with the pandering language of Republicans want to stand in the way of your health care choices, they have magically cast a spell over a chunk of the female voters, and the conservatives are about as effective as a low-level wannabe wizard in breaking the spell of these great socialist sorcerers. Abortion is not a health care choice. Death is not health. Pro-life is not extreme. Sucking a child's brain out is, though. Pro-life, even in the case of rape or incest, is not extreme. Leaving a child to die when the child slips out of the womb in the event the doctor wasn't able to suck the child's brains out is extreme. Nobody in their right mind thinks that rape or incest is okay. But nobody in their right mind would put the child at fault. Nobody in their right mind makes the child pay the death penalty for someone else's crime. Here's a short skit I wrote a couple of years ago, and a couple of friends of mine acted it out. We just slapped it together back then, but I think it gets the point across with the irony that a sexual offender still gets to keep their life while the child loses theirs.
So what are you in for?
Molestation, rape, incest, stuff like that.
Oh man, that's quite a list. Wait a minute. How did you even, you know?
I didn't, man. I was framed.
Yeah, well, framed, shamed. That's what they all say, huh? But even if you were, you wouldn't get the death penalty for the things you'd be charged with. I mean, prisoners can get life. What are you talking about?
Oh, he's really kicking.
Yeah, I'd be a little pissed off too. After all, he was framed.
Now check this out. Y'all, I really don't trust a person in office who isn't pro-life. If a person is not willing to recognize the first God-given right, which is life, how can they really respect the rights to liberty, the pursuit of happiness, or property? Y'all do know that the Declaration of Independence says we all are created equal, right? I'll remind you again, it doesn't say all men are equal. It doesn't even say all men are born equal. It says created equal. That's the only event we all truly have in common that makes us equal, and that's our creation, the marriage of the male seed to the female egg. And when that life is created, that's when the right to life begins. But if a person has a liberal streak in them, they will try to deny personhood, just like it was with slavery. That's what happens when people take liberties with the Constitution. I'm sure even Condoleezza Rice doesn't like to think of herself as pro-abortion. I'm sure she likes the sugar-coated phrase of pro-choice. I'm sure most of the people who think of themselves as pro-choice like to think they're actually not for abortion. They just think that a woman should have a choice. But if you're for a woman's choice, but not actually for abortion, then you have to ask yourself, why exactly are you not for abortion? You're okay with the choice, but it doesn't mean you're pro-abortion, right? Well, why not? What is it about abortion that you're not for, even though you support the so-called right of choice? The only thing that can make you not be for abortion is if it's because you know that the child is human. Yet you're saying it's okay for a woman to make the choice to kill the child. If the child's not human, then you shouldn't worry about being for abortion, because having that thing removed from you shouldn't be any different than blowing your nose and having a glob of snot removed from your body. But to these wishy-washy so-called Republicans who say they're pro-life except in the instance of rape or incest, you can't say, oh yeah, the child in the womb is human. Oh, the child was conceived in rape? Okay, then that thing in your belly is no longer human. Feel free to kill whatever it is if you want. I'm Alfonso Rachel with Zonation, and do I agree with the idea of bombing abortion facilities? Hell no. But if you really want to strike a blow to the abortion culture and go into more detail with me in defending the pro-life issue, download a copy of my audiobook, Weapon of Ass Destruction, available at alfonsorachel.com. Having a glob of snot removed from your body.
Live 22 minutes after the hour right here on September the 4th, 2012. Welcome to the new month. We are just a little over 2 months away from getting rid of this president. It's almost over. It's almost a wrap. Well, I know we then have another month or so after the fact, but bottom line is it's almost over. We're 2 months after that, but bottom line is you get them the hell out of here. Now, I one of the things that I've noticed about this campaign, the Democrats' campaign, to win this election, is that they're screaming racism everywhere, and they're dividing this country. I'm laughing at C-SPAN now because they keep talking about this better together and togetherness, and you know we all are one, and you know we all need to band together, and this group and that group, and we all need to be one. But the entire campaign has been about divisiveness. The reason why I know that this isn't working is because the pundits over at MSDNC, they can't stop losing their goddamn minds. And they are losing control over there. Now, I don't know if anybody checked out this particular audio, but you need to hear it for yourself. And this woman's name is Melissa Harris Perry. And when confronted with the fact that business owners are the ones that take risk in this country, Melissa Harris Perry, can't deal with that. She is explaining in this diatribe what real risk is. Apparently, there are no other risks in the world other than dodging bullets and picking schools for your children. It's one extreme to another. But I want you to listen to this crazy broad. Just listen to this broad and how she completely loses control on her own show on MSDNC.
I live in a neighborhood where people are shot on my street corner. I live in a neighborhood where people have to figure out how to get their kid to school because maybe it'll be a good school and maybe it won't. I am sick of the idea that being wealthy is risky. No, there's a huge safety net that whenever you fail will catch you and catch you and catch you. Being poor is what is risky. We have to create a safety net for poor people, and when we won't because they happen to look different from us, it is the problem. pervasive of ugliness.
It is. Well,
it's
this
on the side.
They
cannot do that.
We cannot do that. We cannot do that. I live in a neighborhood where people are shot on the street corner. Wait a minute. What are they paying you over there? How much money are you making over there? Where you're only making enough money to live in the neighborhood where people are getting shot on your street corner. I mean, what are you staying there for? To keep it real? Miss Harris Perry? Really? You live in a neighborhood? Really? You live in a neighborhood where people are shot on the corner? I mean, I would suggest that you rethink your options here. I mean, if you're trying to tell me that your life is risky, because that's what it sounds like to me, your life is risky. That you walk out your door and you may be shot. Why are you still there? Do you live at home with mom and dad? Can you not move out? Can you not get into the suburbs? I want to know where this broad lives. Now, JC, can you find out for me? I'll let JC come back because he's in the bubble. I need to find out where this broad lives, where she currently resides. JC, can we find out where Melissa Harris Perry lives? Can we find out this woman's residence, as I should say? Where does this woman live? Is she in Harlem? Is she in Bed-Stuy, Brownsville, Flatbush, Trenton, Newark? Where is this woman living? I can't seem to understand why anybody would think that this woman is living in the ghetto. Well, spewing her garbage on MSDNC. She loses her mind. Listen to her. These are her own words. Her own words.
I live in a neighborhood where people are shot on my street corner. I live in a neighborhood where people have to figure out how to get their kid into school because maybe it'll be a good school and maybe it won't. I am sick of the idea that being wealthy is risky. No, there is a huge safety net that whenever you fail will catch you and catch you and catch you. Being poor is what is risky. We have to create a safety net for poor people, and when we won't because they happen to look different from us, it is the pervasive of ugliness.
And I love the way that the panel, they're not even the host of the show, saying, Melissa, calm down. What the hell is going on with you? What are you losing control for, broad? Will you calm down? What are you screaming for? I mean, calm yourself down, woman. I mean, look, what... Do you need a loan? I mean, maybe you need to get the hell out the hood. Where do you live? Can we help you? Do you need security? What? Al Sharpton? He's on the same network. He can't get you some sort of affordable housing in a nicer neighborhood. What's going on? What is your problem? This broad is losing control. JC, are you there? Please tell me you're there, JC. Can you hear me? Where's this guy? Come on, JC. You got your phone on mute or something? JC, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. You got to turn my mic on.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah. I'm just saying. Okay, so can you find out where this woman lives? What horrible neighborhood does this woman live in? Do you know?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure. But I saw this. I flipped out. There ain't no way in hell you can tell me that this woman is living in somebody's hood. She may be an author of African American studies and books and so on and so forth, but I see her living in a hood.
Well, obviously her books are not selling. I see her giving public speeches. She does speaking events. You know, I see her at all of these committees and whatnot. She's out there giving public comments. And stuff like she's out there, helping the world live a better life. Let me see. Hold on. Mike in Florida, I think. Hold on. Mike in Florida may have some info. She lives in New Orleans. I hope he's joking when he says that. Does she truly live in New Orleans? For crying out loud, this woman, she sounds like she's lost damn mind. What part of New Orleans does she live in, for crying out loud? Okay, hold on. Mike is on the line. Thank you, Mike. And we'll go ahead and ask real quick. Mike, what town does this girl live in?
She lives in New Orleans. It's on her Wikipedia page. She lives in New Orleans. So she's married to a guy who ran for mayor of New Orleans in 2010. Apparently, she and her husband were restoring a house in the 7th Ward. Now, whether she lives in the 7th Ward currently remains to be seen, but if she's living in New Orleans, unless she lives in a brownstone in the French Quarter, there's possibility of some Negroes getting shot in her neighborhood.
Okay, there's a possibility. But okay, we're talking about New Orleans here, okay? Which is,
yeah,
I would consider New Orleans being a place where, as far as affordability for somebody who is a national cable news anchor, could afford living better than the 9th or, as you put it, the 7th Ward.
Well, if she wants to move to the 7th Ward, dude, I don't know what's wrong with her, because that's kind of ghetto-ish. You know, maybe she wants to keep it real. Oh, you know, she's only half black, by the way.
Is she? No. What is
she? According to her Wikipedia page, her father was a professor of Afro-American studies who was also a Mormon. So she was fathered by the elusive black Mormon to her white mother. And, of course, he ran off and left her with the kid. Not surprising. So she was raised by her white mom, who left the Mormon church.
Whoa. Are you kidding me?
Her quote is, "I'm black." So she's as black as Barack Obama.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's probably how she identifies with him.
Well, yeah.
She identifies with him.
I don't know if she has good hair or not, because she's always got it in those stupid cornrows.
Yeah, she's always doing the cornrow thing. But what did you think of this, like, losing control on the air? I mean, this sounds like desperation to me.
They're crazy. The Democrats are all friggin' crazy. They're desperate to have some attention and continue their victimhood. But come on, man. She's not a victim.
She's not.
And look, yeah, New Orleans does suck. And like I said, unless you live in the quarter, if you're living in the city of New Orleans, there's probably violence on your doorstep.
Yeah, okay. Well, my point is, get the hell out. She can afford it. She's got the means.
I think she said she was going to stop commuting from New Orleans to New York and move to New York City.
Well, get up here. I'm pretty sure MSNBC will put her in a nice little neighborhood. Even if she's got to live in Queens or the outer boroughs. I mean, for crying out loud.
You don't think they're going to put her in the boogie town?
Only if it's cheaper. Only if it's cheaper. That's where they're going to put that broad. If anything, they'll put her in the outer boroughs. She can live in Sunnyside, Queens, you know, which is a nice little neighborhood. A lot of Latinos that'll put her, you know, amongst the people who she seems to love and respect and adore. I'm pretty sure she'll be happy to be there.
They should move her to Brighton Beach with the Russians.
Yes, she can move there. Take that long commute in. Ride on the trains. Maybe she can see with what was that baseball player Joe Rocker saw on the 7 train.
That poor guy. Yeah, they ran John Rocker through the mill, and all he did was speak the truth.
Yeah, John Rocker. I said Joe Rocker. John Rocker. Yeah, let her ride on that train from Brighton Beach into the city and see whether or not she thinks John Rocker had a point.
Exactly.
But come on. She's talking about risk in this country, people getting shot in their neighborhoods.
Her quote was that there was nothing more risky than being a poor person in America. Why don't you take a trip to Africa, you asshole?
Exactly.
Why don't you go hang out in Mexico for a little while and have 15 heads on your doorstep, see what's risky.
There you go. And, you know, listen, you look at Mexico, which is a perfect example of what you're talking about. If you look at some of these places where these Mexicans are being murdered by the cartels. Have you seen some of the homes in the neighborhoods that they're being shot in? These are not shanty towns, my friend.
Well, you know, bro, as non-PC as it is, the most dangerous thing in America is to live near a bunch of black people. Okay, I'm sorry. That's the most dangerous thing in America. You can live in a trailer park in West Virginia, and it's safer than living around a bunch of black people.
Right. If someone gave me a choice of living in Harlem or living in a trailer park where everyone is making meth and the place might explode, I'm taking the trailer park.
You got that right. They're going to do their meth and leave you alone. They might steal your shit, but they're not going to kill you.
Exactly. I'd rather be robbed than shot. Absolutely.
Oh, man, did you hear about Mayor Tiny Dancer Emanuel?
Oh, well, first of all, I hear he's going to speak at the Democratic National Convention tonight, and then he's going to fly right back, right?
Yeah,
to Chicago.
he was going to stay for like 4 days or something with his security detail of 50 Chicago police officers. But I think the people of Chicago said, look, fool, we're having a murder epidemic, and the teacher's about to go on strike. Maybe you should stay here.
Yeah. I can't believe the argument that they made about that, which was, I felt, alarming. They said that the police officers that they were sending to Charlotte, North Carolina, were all off duty. They would not be working. And my question to that was, why did they be in Charlotte?
Put them to work.
Exactly.
You need cops. The Negroes are killing each other like the Congo.
It's hilarious. Here's another point I want to make about the Democratic National Convention. I want to get Mary in here. If you're watching C-SPAN and you're looking at the cameras going across, you know, people in the crowd, they've got all of these B-list actors who are standing in the crowd. So far, I've seen Wayne Knight, who played Newman on Seinfeld. I've seen John Leguizamo. Right? I've seen John Leguizamo. I've also seen Bo Bridges. And the last person I saw was Tony Shalhoub of Monk. And
well, there's the diversity.
Well, no, I give them that. What makes me laugh so hard is that during the Republican National Convention, C-SPAN wasn't spending that much time showing actors or Hollywood types in there. And John Voight was there. There were some other Republicans who were there who were celebrities. They never panned out to those people, which I find incredibly odd that they're falling into.
I'm sorry. I'm reading Melissa Harris Perry's wiki page. Yes, the queen of black people. Got her PhD from that pinnacle of black learning, Duke.
Mary, why are you bugging us on the phone? Hello, dear. Is she even there? She probably got me on mute.
She has a PhD in political science. She has an honoris causa doctorate from Meadville Lombard Theological School. And she got a Master of Divinity at Union Theological Seminary so that she could understand the role of the black church in political movement.
Oh, you got to be kidding me.
And she says her mentor at Wake Forest was Maya Angelou.
Of course. You know, I'm so sick and tired. See, this is what makes me laugh with the Maya Angelou thing, okay? This is what makes me laugh. Every one of these black women still want to quote, still I rise. And they consider this woman, as some sort of patriarch of like philosophy. I mean, matriarch, I should say, I don't know, philosophy or political thinking or social thinking, right?
Mm-hmm.
This woman is a former cokehead whore.
Well, do you know who Maya Angelou's first husband was?
No, I don't know this one.
He was Greek. Her first husband in 1951 was Estanius Angelus.
Really?
So she didn't even marry a black guy.
Oh. You know, it's disgusting that
you know what her real name is?
This.
Her real name is Marguerite Johnson.
Oh, that's right. I know that's right. Her name is Marguerite Johnson. You're damn right.
And then once she married the Greek guy, she found her blackness. How the hell that happens?
I don't know. Apparently, I was going to say something very, very God. I don't know.
And she was friends with Malcolm X?
Yes, I know.
Again, it's just sad, man. And all these people are just, it doesn't really matter who we elect, because it's all just rearranging deck chairs on the freaking Titanic. None of these people will talk about anything that's important. You know, the Democrats don't have the balls to stand up and talk about austerity. The Republicans don't have the balls to talk about austerity. They're just going to blow smoke up our collective asses and hope that the whole shooting match doesn't fall apart.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. That I will agree there, 100%. 100%. Well, look, I got plenty of audio I need to get to, which we're going to get to as soon as we get back. So stick around. Give me a couple of minutes. We will be right back. It's Reese on the Radio. Stick around right here on blogtalkradio.com.
So, Biden says they're gonna put y'all back in chains. And when he gets called out for it, we Republicans get accused of taking what he said out of context. It's always us taking y'all out of context. It's always, you're so misunderstood. And y'all are getting more indignant by the day as we Republicans expose you for how cynical, hateful, greedy, covetous, racist, and just straight up nuttier than a jar of Skippy you Democrats actually are.
I think what's happening.
Propaganda.
Glaring examples I like to point to about how Democrats are always making excuses is Bill Clinton at Robert Byrd's memorial. Bill Clinton tries to make light of Democrat Senator Robert Byrd being in the KKK and tries to sell us on overlooking the racist position he ran on by saying, give him a break. He was just trying to get elected. You're exactly right, Bill. That was key for Democrats. And a big reason why they got elected was because they were trusted to represent the racist sentiments of their constituency. This is at the core of the Democrat Party. People didn't vote for Republicans for this. They voted Democrat. But the Republican Party is the party of racists. Based on what? Barry Goldwater? Lee Atwater? Strom Thurmond? Did I miss anybody? I'm sure you liberals got a few cherry-picked figures for your talking points. But while you try to recite these names, keep in mind the words of your Democrat darling, Bill Clinton. Robert Byrd was just trying to get elected. That's pretty much the way it was for Democrats, period. The hotbeds of bigotry in America are commonly recognized as the southern states, right? And keep in mind, the people are going to vote for those who represent their racist values. And we've already agreed that the southern states have been the hottest for bigotry, right? Well, that list of so-called racist Republicans that liberals try to bring up is as insignificant as the last sheet of tissue on a toilet paper roll after Michael Moore binges on buffalo wings. Let's look at these racist states, shall we? Texas. Oh, yeah. Whole lot of racist rednecks down there. And, of course, they're going to want people in office who represent their white supremacist culture, right? That's why out of 47 governors, 38 of them have been Democrats and only 7 have been Republican. Oh, but years of Democrat racist representation is nothing compared to the strategies of Bush Sr.'s campaign manager Lee Atwater. But hold on. That's just one of those ultra-racist states. Alabama had 53 governors. 42 have been Democrats. Only 6 chosen by the people of that state were Republican. But you want to hold Republicans responsible for racism. Okay.
The racist Democrat representation continues with Mississippi. Ooh-wee, that's a barroom hoedown of bigotry right there. They've had 64 governors in that state. 52 have been Democrats, and only 6 have been Republicans. Yeah, but Strom Thurmond, shut up. What about Democrat segregationist Lester Maddox? And for every so-called racist Republican you liberals try to point to, there's like 10 Democrat actual racists. But y'all still really want to believe that racism is the fault of Republicans that badly, huh? Despite these figures? Okay, let's continue. And I'm not even talking about congressmen and senators and mayors and such. That would take too long. But yes, the majority of them were Democrats too. Georgia has had 82 governors. 47 were Democrats. Only 4 were Republicans. Louisiana, a lot of racism there. 53 governors. 30 were Democrats. 11 have been Republicans. Arkansas, 45 governors, 8 Republicans, the rest were Democrats. Tennessee, 58 governors, 10 Republicans, 34 of them were Democrats. South Carolina, 116 governors, 8 of them Republicans, 90 of them were Democrats. Do I really need to go through all these states where racism was the hottest? I thought you were Democrats. Isn't it the majority rules in your party? Well, the majority of your party's history is racist, yet because of minority instances of arguable racism in the Republican Party, the minority ruling is that the Republicans are racist? See how contradictory y'all are? Are you understanding that the racist population of these states that are commonly known as the most racist states of the United States elected people who represented their racist values, and the people representing their racist values were Democrats? You can't lay the blame on Republicans when it was Democrats controlling these states. The Democrat Party platform is rooted in racism. Have you ever read the original Democrat Party platform? The original included language to protect their so-called right to force people into slavery. But Republicans are the racists because the original Republican Party platform was to abolish slavery? And when liberals are reminded of this, they always say the same thing. Yeah, well, you know what, Zoe? That was a long time ago, and you need to get over it. Really? Okay, well, you know what? Slavery itself was a long time ago. Why don't y'all get over that? Marinate on that a bit while we pick this up on the next Zonation. Straight up nuttier than a jar of Skippy.
And we are back on this September 4th, 2012. First day of the Democratic National Convention. I watch these people closely. I love when people, you know, talk about, like, why would you watch it? I mean, you don't support their party. Why would you be here? And I'm looking at, you know, Joe Biden is there.
On the first day, Joe Biden. Silly Joe Biden.
They gotta watch his damn mouth.
Well, they got to watch his mouth. That's why they got him sitting in the audience.
As far away from the damn microphone as they can get him.
You're right. Yeah, the average Joe Biden, he's sitting there. And I'm looking at all these people with their silly hats.
You know what? I'm waiting on you to bring up one story. And I'm like, why is he beating around the bush? Why did he let this elephant sit on our screen?
What's that?
Well, I said, why are you going to let the big old pink elephant sit on our screen like it doesn't exist?
What's the big pink elephant sitting on our screen?
Nicki Minaj.
Look, I'm going to get a Nicki Minaj in the next hour because I think that story is misconstrued. We'll get into her in a little bit. But because I saw this the article that you sent me, and the Washington Post is up in arms about this story. So I will get into that in the next hour. But I want to talk about this. There are several stories that are going on right now, okay? And this just goes right into the meme of what it is that's going on with the Democrats and this election. Now, I don't know if anybody here knows, but Joyless Behar over at The View,
has another TV show. Critically failed.
She's giving this woman a job.
My point. The woman critically failed. Critically failed at Headline News. At the HLN Network, which is a sister company of CNN. Failed miserably over there at HLN and ended up getting a job on Current TV with Al Gore. Now, Al Gore was her guest on the show today. Now, let me explain something to you, because I said something in an earlier monologue about women who I call broads and women I call bitches. This bitch, Joy Behar, Joyless Behar, she had to be checked by Al Gore. He had to check her ass on the air. But I give Al Gore credit because he did it in a diplomatic way and he shut this stupid bitch's mouth because she didn't even know how to respond because this dumbass forgot her history. Now, I want you to check this out because she's talking about an old story that has been completely removed. She's talking about taxes and Romney. Why won't he release his tax returns? Why won't he release his tax returns? Oh, no. Barney, can I get a Frank in me has shown up at the Democratic National Convention. And she's talking to Al Gore. She moves on from the tax thing, and now she's become a racist, bigoted broad. And she asked this question to Al Gore about Mitt Romney when she gets nowhere on the tax story because it's old. Listen to this exchange and how Al Gore, the owner of the network she's on, checks her ass and she backs off like a fat Italian puppy.
Very reluctant to talk about Mormonism also. Why do you think that is?
Well, actually, I was pleasantly surprised on the Thursday night of their convention when they brought out one of the lay leaders who had worked closely with him to talk about what they had done in the tabernacle there. And then some people that had been a part of his flock as a kind of a lay minister. And I thought that was candid and open. And I do think, Joy, that, of course, I hope that President Obama wins re-election handily. But I think it's...
No, no. Now listen to what he says. This is where he's checking her ass real quick. Listen to what he says, Joy.
Joy, that...
Listen to what he said.
I do think, Joy...
I do think, Joy... Watch your mouth, bitch.
I do think, Joy, that... of course, I hope that President Obama wins re-election handily. But I think in the course of this campaign, it is a victory for the country to have the issue of Governor Romney's faith become pretty much a non-issue. That's good for the country.
Oh, yes. Backed off real quick. And then he does this to her. Gives a little history lesson.
I remember many years ago when I was a young boy and John F. Kennedy was running as the first Catholic. My grandmother, who had a big heart and very smart but was very old and came out of that different sensibility in those early part of the 20th century when she was born. And she had a hard time voting for somebody who was a Catholic. And, of course, now everybody thinks that's so ridiculous. Why would it even be mentioned? And I hope that regardless of the outcome in this race, that that's the case for the Latter-day Saints religion also.
Well, any religion. I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
Cares?
I totally agree.
Who cares? Who cares? She changes her tune after her boss sets her straight. Now you remember the tone of the question.
He seems to be reluctant to talk about Mormonism also. Why do you think that is?
He seems to be reluctant to talk about Mormonism. Because they're a cult, bitch, right? That's why I love it. Joy Behar gets caught out there with her ridiculousness. And that's what it is that you see. And then Al Gore lets her know, hey, remember Kennedy, stupid? Yeah, guy on our side? Yeah, people didn't want him elected because he was Catholic. Yeah, we don't do that here. Remember, we're not supposed to disrespect people behind their religion, right? Oh, yeah, sure. Let's take a call. Who's on the line with us at Trace on the Radio?
Hello.
Hey.
All the humanity. All the tragedy. I thought you'd never shut up. I had to eat dinner. And even that I completed, and you were still yapping.
My apologies.
So,
to you, man. Hey, everything.
Listen, my man, right, when are you going to put the chains on?
The chains?
The chains of slavery.
That's never going to happen.
I mean, I don't know if you heard the latest DNC ad. We all belong to the government.
Or
Jesus, as if it just came out of Hitler or Stalin's playbook.
You know what? And I find it odd that this video was ever made. You have got, they've got to take advantage of this. The Republican National Committee has got to take advantage of this, that we all are a part of the government. Now, I know what the Democrats will say. They're saying that, you know, we all play a role in how government works. You know, it's about the people. But that's not what it's not what they're saying at all. We're all a part of the government. In essence, the government, you know, is the supreme being. We're all a part of it. You can be a part of a religion. You can be a part of a group. You can be Republicans or Democrats, but we're all a part of the government. The government's the big picture. I didn't know that's the deal. Government's bigger and better than God, according to these
people
morons.
Didn't listen to Hitler in Mein Kampf. And for Christ's sake, aren't they listening to Joe Biden when he said, y'all in chains? the thing is there for you, folks, to listen. These bastards want to put you in chains. Literally. Figuratively.
And they want you. And they want you to be in chains for one reason, and that is so the government can control what you do, what you eat, what you say. They want to control it all. They want to control it all. Now, wait a minute. Now, did Harry Reid speak already at the Democratic?
Well, if he did, my dinner wouldn't have been still in my stomach.
Well, I don't know whether
I'm
or not
trying to avoid it. I mean, you know.
Well, Harry Reid.
Oh, geez, how do you like that? 5 seconds for a black woman smacking her hands together. Geez, more than I saw her on last week.
No. Now, listen.
Of course, they're diverse.
Man is showing an awful lot of black people. But when they're showing black people at C-SPAN, they are showing these black people in the most ridiculous light ever. They are wearing funny hats.
I was wondering
hats.
When you said that, could it be a pool shark?
Yeah, one of them looks like a pool shark. Another woman
looks
like...
No, a pool shot.
A pool shot? Oh, you mean like an entire pool of blacks?
No.
Okay,
no. You only have so many spots, you pool your coverage.
Oh, okay. No. I have no idea.
In other words,
who
knows if it's the C-SPAN's cameras or they're borrowing it from a network, and then they just take what they want.
No, these are C-SPAN's cameras. These are directly their cameras, and you know I'm watching it directly on their feed, I guess, on their channel. So this appears to be directly from them. But you know,
speaking
of
feeds, what did you think about what we were fed today in Boston by the federal court?
Look, that is 9 o'clock hour. Stay tuned.
Okay.
When we come back to the top of the hour, we've got to talk about that because I've been receiving so many emails about this, and I cannot believe that this judge was appointed by Reagan. Of all people. But
Souter was appointed by Bush, you know. People screw up.
This is true. But I will tell you this. This isn't the only time when someone appointed by Reagan has turned around and, like, really flipped the whole nomination up by Reagan on its ear.
But that means he has grown while he's in office.
No, I don't believe that's the case at all.
No. You don't get it, Reese. If he conservative to liberal means he's grown.
Yeah,
liberal to conservative, he's a rat bastard, and let's impeach him.
You're absolutely right. Well, stick around. We're going to talk about that at the top of the hour when we return and see if we can get we can chip Harry Reid. I don't know whether or not he spoke. I'm hoping that he did. He couldn't have spoken already. But we'll chip it in the event that it comes. Stick around. We'll be right back at 3 Center Radio.
President said, and he's going to put you all in chains. Was he talking about slavery? You bet your ass he was. Was he using a vernacular? Yes, he was. Did he think it was cute because there were many in the audience? Yes, he did. Was it something stupid to say? You bet your life it was stupid. And it is something that if a black had said it, we would have been laughing because we would know that damn hell. They may be beating the hell out of us, but they ain't thinking about putting us in any chains.
It's Reese on the Radio, 1 minute after the hour. I am logging my complaint today about blogtalkradio.com. For some odd reason, they have been running slow. The feed has been awful. And that's just my personal opinion. It's been driving me up the wall for the past hour or so. That I don't seem to understand how in the hell this is happening, that things are running this slow. As Dennis in Massachusetts just mentioned, I got this word earlier today that a judge is ruling in Massachusetts that a transgender will get his, her, shim, herms, sex change operation on the taxpayer dime. And I'm still trying to figure out how in the hell this could have ever happened. Who this gentleman's lawyer was, whether or not the judge was sympathetic, empathetic, idiotic, I don't know. But of course people are outraged. But let me tell you something. Because I know some people in Massachusetts who listen to the show. And I know that there are a lot of them out there who listen to the show. You get the government you deserve. And look, Massachusetts is only 18% conservative. Now, when I found that out, I was stunned because I would have guessed it was smaller. That's a considerable amount, 18%. The number's falling every year. I think some 2,500 to 5,000 conservatives move out of the state every year. And just literally just handing it over. Just giving it. Look, let the liberals have it. I'm sick of this place. And getting the hell out. And they are. They're leaving in droves. Don't get me wrong. I love Massachusetts. I love Boston. I love it. I love it. But I don't think that city, Boston, and that state, Massachusetts, is ever going to come to its senses. And it probably won't. So everyone's wondering whether or not taxpayers should have to foot the bill for, and not only that, the guy's a convicted killer, get a sex change operation. Now, they would probably vote yes for this in California. They would probably vote yes for this in New Mexico. Where else would they vote for this? Let me see. No, not Florida. That wouldn't happen. They definitely vote for this in New York. New Yorkers might have an issue with that. Cuomo, I'll admit, maybe he's kind of tough on issues like that. I don't think he's going to allow the taxpayers to have to pay for that. That would almost be insane. But let's get the details, of course, from our esteemed listeners. So, Dennis, and I'll bring in Mike as well. So you guys have followed this story. Who did he kill? When did he kill them? And is this guy on death row?
There's no death row. There's no death row in the Commonwealth.
Of course not.
I don't know, but something just came. We just got a bulletin from Barack Obama Sr. From back from the grave. He said, America, it's okay to vote against my son. You've already put up with him twice as long as I did.
I think the transgender person killed his wife a long time ago.
So he killed his wife?
Killed his wife.
Yeah, his wife
killed. Is it because she found out he
Don't know the motive, but is this going to be paid for by the taxpayers of Massachusetts or the federal going to pick up the dime?
More likely
the Commonwealth. This is going to be. Yeah, the Commonwealth will foot the bill.
Huh? That's what they deserve.
Beyond a shadow of a doubt.
Good for them.
And again,
U.S. District Judge Mark Wolf is believed to be the first federal judge to order prison officials to provide sex reassignment surgery for a transgender inmate. 120-page ruling.
Crazy. That's what you get up there.
To me,
he was appointed in 85 by the sainted Ronald Reagan.
Again.
He said, security concerns are either pretextual or can be dealt with. It would be up to the prison officials to decide how and where to house a co-select after the surgery.
Well,
a spokesman for the Commonwealth's DOC said the agency would have no immediate comment on the ruling. We are reviewing the decision and exploring our appellate options.
Well, this person is already living as a woman, but in male prison, so I don't know how that works out. It must be popular in the shower. But I guess once they did the reassignment, they'd have to put it in female prison.
No. You put him in protective custody. There's no general population in protective custody. If he wants to live out his life as a woman, you put him in protective custody. And in protective custody, they watch like a hawk 23 hours a day. They stay in their cell. This is a
condition. But, Reese, there's something else that we've overlooked.
What's that?
It can cost up to $20,000, but it's elective surgery. Many insurance companies reject the surgery as elective. So what the hell is the Commonwealth, what the hell is the government doing with elective surgery?
Very good.
They're probably his lawyer classed it as a medical necessity for psychological reasons or some silly bullshit. But again, and it's Massachusetts.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you expect?
But they've already said the same thing in Colorado, California, Idaho, and Wisconsin. Inmates there have sued unsuccessfully to try to get the surgery, making similar arguments that denying it violates the Constitution's protection against cruel and unusual punishment.
Well, let's look at that from a...
That's the bar.
Let's look at this from the grand scheme as far as the way that you put it, saying that, as it is as an elective surgery. But remember, we're talking about an elective surgery in regards to somebody who is now a ward of the state, if you will. Right?
He tried to castrate himself and twice tried to commit suicide, according to his
Yeah, but I mean, why is that significant? I mean, that means nothing. I mean, please, I hope these folks in the media are not trying to suggest, well, he's like, oh, well, just give it to him. The poor guy almost killed himself.
No, it was just a matter of fact as part of the body of the coffin.
Part of the story. Well, my look at all of that was, you let the son of a bitch kill himself. I mean, you know, if we can't get an eye for an eye, at least let him take his own eye out, if you get my meaning.
Yeah.
Not how it works in the People's Republic of Massachusetts.
Exactly. The bottom line is you let the guy off himself. You know, if he's so.
Well, Reese, are you going to be sad calling him Robert or Michelle?
We
nothing
call
to
him
do with the First Lady, by the way.
Call him Shim or Herm. That's what we call
that's what you get, you know. It's
for a minute, I thought you were going to say shift.
You can't be surprised that Massachusetts pulled that off.
No, exactly. I'm not stunned at all. But see, you know, now you're there in Massachusetts, Dennis. Most
yes.
people are outraged at this ruling, aren't they?
I would think so.
Yeah, I mean,
you can't get into people's brains. I mean, look what they did 4 years ago. They elected Barry.
I mean, what do you think is on the campus of Harvard?
Yeah, you know
hey,
what?
Hey, I went there.
But you know
play
what?
Off Harvard.
If you ask the kids in the campus of Harvard whether or not their tax dollars should pay for somebody's sex change operation who is in jail for murder, and to find out that he murdered a woman, and you found he murdered a woman, you don't believe that the people – I mean, come on. Their primary directive at Harvard University is to protect women, okay? That's one, protect women's rights. And if a
you
man
mean like Delia Wath, Elizabeth Warren.
Exactly. You protect women, and not only that, this guy is a convicted killer, and he's a man. And if you think that just because – he wants to live life as a woman, that that's going to supersede the protecting the life of a woman. You're nuts. They're never, ever going to agree with that. So Harvard's going
to
have
the funny thing is he first sued the Commonwealth 12 years ago. It's taken this long to get this far.
Has it really taken
2 years? Yeah. So 2
directive.
Years later after the suing, which I guess it's 10 years ago, Judge Wolf ruled that Kozelek was entitled to treatment for gender identity disorder but stopped short of ordering surgery. He sued again in 2005, arguing that the surgery was a medical necessity.
You guys are missing that the prime directive of liberals is to protect the other.
Well, this is true.
You don't get much more other than a tranny.
Quote, the court finds there is no less intrusive means to correct the prolonged violation of Kozelek's Eighth Amendment right to adequate medical care. Close quote. That was part of the ruling. So why can't you put him in a prison hospital as a man?
Then I guess it's time to take the Supreme Court and let them handle it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, the Commonwealth said that their options are still there.
Yeah, take it to SCOTUS. Let SCOTUS handle it.
Yeah, but again,
go to the First Court of Appeals, which handles New England.
This judge reminds me of that same another judge in California who overturned the vote in 2008, Proposition 8 in California against constituting gay marriage.
The gay judge.
Yeah, that's Ninth Circuit or whatever out there.
Right, the Ninth Circuit judge. Exactly. Exactly, the Ninth Circuit judge. And this was another guy appointed by Reagan.
It gets even worse. The Department of Correction here in the Commonwealth's own medical experts, as noted by Judge Wolf, testified they believe surgery was the only adequate treatment for Kozelek. The department's ex-commissioner testified that providing Kozelek with surgery would present insurmountable security concerns. But
well,
Wolf and Kozelek had proven these purported concerns masked the real reason for denying surgery, quote, a feel of fear of controversy, criticism, ridicule, and scorn. What the hell? I mean, close quote. I mean, is this Alice in Wonderland?
It seems like the rights of the prisoner are superseding the rights of the American people, or at least the people of Massachusetts, the taxpayer.
Let me run this by, and I want to ask this. You know, this seems to be a trend of transgendered inmates. Do you think that maybe that there should be a compact among the several states to build a central location for transgendered prisoners so you don't have to provide them with sex changes and then they could be among whatever sex they deem that they feel they are in perfect safety and then still serve their sentence?
JC, were you going to add something?
I was going to say, why don't they just cut off his tool, surgically implant it on his forehead, and call it transfer?
And call it cancer? Is that what you said?
Call it transfer.
You mean you're telling me, JC, instead of an appendectomy, it would be an appendectomy?
I guess so.
Well, you know, when they go from female to male, that's called an adidectomy.
It's called a what?
Adidectomy.
You heard it, folks, right here on Reese on the Radio. Nowhere else in America can you hear this.
Oh, that's just sick. Oh, you guys are just horrible. Well, I get.
Well, I used to be a Democrat. That's why I'm horrible.
Well, that's to me, it just baffles the crap out of me that's you know.
That's PC run amok, but that's what you get.
Yeah.
You know, when you've got people who are isolated from the real world, and a lot of these judges have been judges forever, and they're isolated from the real world. They
yeah.
deal in abstracts and concepts
yeah.
and not common sense.
Yeah, I don't. There's no common sense here whatsoever. That's the part that I'm more so baffled behind in all of this. But, you know, that's
yeah,
what it is that you get.
I don't even have a problem with insurance companies paying for gender reassignment surgery if the person is one of those rare cases that has the, like, 2XY chromosome. You know, when they can prove
right.
an actual genetic issue.
Right.
I don't care about
right.
that. If you're just
okay.
some dude
you know
who
what?
Wants to be a chick, I don't think that should be either on the taxpayer's dime or on the insurance company's dime.
Oh, okay, well, are you suggesting that, okay, are you saying that we should, you're talking about somebody who might be even a hermaphrodite for that?
Yeah, there are people out there that have two X's and a Y, so they are
okay.
genetically screwed up.
Okay,
they also made another ruling, I don't know if you're aware of, Reese.
What's that?
Which is... Well, Ted Kennedy's last car had to be modified, and the courts ordered all of his airbags to be labeled with not to be used as a flotation device.
All right, Rahm Emanuel speaking. Let's jip it, because I want to get a little bit of that.
Oh, from Chicago.
We got to jip it. He's speaking now. So give us a little while. We'll be back shortly. Here's a little bit of Rahm Emanuel, because we got to get his speech and break it down.
Yeah.
Job. And America's bravest, our men and women in uniform, were fighting for what soon would be the longest war in our history. You remember the uncertainty and the fear that seized our country. On that first day, I said, Mr. President, which crisis do you want to tackle first? He looked me in the eye with that look he usually reserved just for his chief of staff. Rahm, we were sent here to tackle all of them, not choose between them. There was no blueprint or how-to manual for fixing a global financial meltdown, an auto crisis, two wars, and a great recession all at the same time. Believe me, if it existed, I would have found it. Each crisis was so deep and so dangerous. Any one of them would have defined another presidency. We faced a once-in-a-generation moment in American history. And fortunately for all of us, we have a once-in-a-generation president. And in those uncharted waters, I saw where the president finds his North Star. Every night, President Obama reads 10 letters from everyday Americans. When I met with the president at the end of each day, he made sure he had their letters to read at his residence. Letters from people just hoping for someone in power to understand their struggles. I can't tell you how many times, whether we were discussing the economy, health care, or energy prices, the president walked to his desk, take out one of the letters and read them to us and say, this is who we are fighting for. Parents working hard to save for their child's education. Middle-class Americans fighting tooth and nail to hold on to their jobs, their homes, or their life savings. It is their voices that President Obama brings to the Oval Office. It is their values I saw him fight for every day. In the first month in office, he fought for the American Recovery Act to cut taxes for the middle class, to put people to work building America's roads, rails, and runways. And today, our economy has gone from losing 800,000 jobs a month to adding 4.5 million private sector jobs in the last 29 months. Banks are slowly but surely lending again, and never again will taxpayers foot the bill for Wall Street's excesses. In case we forgot, that was the change we believed in. That was the change we fought for. That was the change President Obama delivered. President Obama took office knowing full well that for the last century, presidents had tried to reform our healthcare system. Today, because of President Obama's courage, kids can stay on their parents' plan until they're 26. Insurers can't kick you off your policy because you have a pre-existing limit. Because you've hit the pre-existing limit. They won't be able to deny you because you have a pre-existing condition. Because of President Obama's leadership, every American will have access to affordable, quality health care. That was the change we believed in. That was the change we fought for. That was the change President Obama delivered. I saw the president make the tough calls in the Situation Room. And today, our troops in Iraq have finally come home so America can do some nation building here at home. That was a change we believed in. That was a change we fought for. That was a change President Obama delivered. I remember when the president received the report that the auto industry had a few weeks before its collapse. We met in the Roosevelt Room late into the night. Some of the president's advisors said that in order to save General Motors, you had to let Chrysler go under. Others said, it's like throwing good money after bad. Among all the experts, there were only guesses, and nobody put it at better than a 1 in 4 shot. Only the president suggested going all in to save the industry and the jobs. Above all the voices in Washington, President Obama listened to the voices that mattered to him most, the voices of the auto workers in the communities that depended on them, just like the voices of the steel workers and the communities on the south side of Chicago where he worked earlier in his career. To President Obama, they weren't just companies that needed a loan. They were communities that needed a leader to stand up for them. And because President Obama made the right choice, over 1 million Americans are still working today. The American auto industry is not just surviving, it's thriving. Where Mitt Romney was willing to turn his back on Akron, Dayton, and Toledo, Ohio, the president said, I've got your back. That was a change we believed in. That was the change we fought for. That was the change President Obama delivered. And in those first few months, the president worked to put accountability into our children's schools with Race to the Top so that every child has an education that measures up to their full potential. He was willing to demand change and embrace reform. The president never changed his views to suit the moment or the audience. And that is also a measure of leadership. Every choice was difficult, but every time, the leadership was steady. Now, the one thing I know with absolute certainty, having served two great presidents, is that in the next 4 years, an unforeseen crisis, challenge, or conflict is going to show up and seize this country. Whose leadership, whose judgment, whose values do you want in the White House when that crisis lands like a thud on the Oval Office desk? A person who said in 4 words, let Detroit go bankrupt, or a president who had another 4 words, not on my watch. A
person who believes in giving tax cuts to the most fortunate or a president who believes in making college affordable for all Americans? A person who wanted to keep Don't Ask, Don't Tell, or a president who believes that who you love should not keep you from serving the country you love? Believe me, having served two great presidents, when the fog of uncertainty that surrounds a crisis storms into the White House and all the advisors and chiefs of staff have only guesses and hedges to offer the president, it will be the president's leadership that determines how we as a nation meet the challenges that face the middle class. It is the president's values that shape the future in which the middle class has hope. The person who takes the oath of office in the next 4 months will shape not just the next 4 years, but the next 40 years of this great nation. In these next 4 years, we need proven leadership, proven judgment, and proven values. America needs 4 more years of Barack Obama. Thank you, and God bless you.
Hi, everybody. I'm Bill Whittle, and this is Afterburner. The Rolling Stones wrote, "You can't always get what you want, but if you try sometimes, you just might find you get what you need." And with Mitt Romney finally taking my advice and selecting Paul Ryan as his running mate, conservatives who make up the bulk of the Republican Party only to be ignored and insulted at every opportunity, it seems, not only get what we want, but we also get what the country needs. First, let's go to what we want. Conservatives understand, especially Tea Party conservatives, understand that the existential threat to this nation is not Al-Qaeda or a nuclear Iran or illegal immigration or crumbling infrastructure or falling education scores or global warming or killer bee infestation. It's none of that. The only thing out there that has the power to destroy our way of life, to utterly render our lives unrecognizable, is the impending worldwide economic collapse that is coming and will happen, and sooner rather than later, if we do not get this insane, pathological, terminal spending under control. Now, to date, there's only been one politician on the national scene. Think of that. Of the 535 Americans that actually live in a democracy, the 435 House members and the 100 senators who actually get to have a say in what goes on out there, out of all of them, only one, has a serious plan to stop this train before it plummets off the rails and goes over the cliff. And that one person is Representative Paul Ryan of Wisconsin, vice presidential candidate for the Republican Party in 2012. And the Democrats are terrified of this guy. Terrified. Because simply listening to him speak for 20 or 30 seconds utterly flummoxes them. All Republicans, you see, have to wear one, if not two, or all three of three labels. Republicans are either evil, stupid, or old. So let's play along. John McCain, old. Sarah Palin, stupid and probably evil. George Bush, stupid and definitely evil. Dick Cheney, old and evil. Ronald Reagan, old and stupid. Newt Gingrich, old and evil. And, of course, Mitt Romney, who's clearly neither old nor stupid, therefore has to be painted as triply evil. But what do they do with Paul Ryan? He's not old. He's young. He's brilliant. He's not stupid. And he's likable and agreeable, so he's not evil. So they'll have to paint him as an extremist. But now the question becomes, who's the real extremist on the American spectrum? The two Boy Scouts? Or dog-eating Mr. You Didn't Build That. Ryan fires up conservatives the way Sarah Palin did for McCain, but Ryan will not be Palinized. Let's see Katie Couric ask Paul Ryan what magazines he reads. He'll probably say something like, Katie, you know, I spend 15 hours a day tearing apart 3,000-page health care bills, running statistical analyses of their pluses and minuses, comparing them with best and worst case estimates of revenues and shortfalls, and then I assign relative financial efficiency and effectiveness weighted variables to assess the best possible outcome. So I don't get a lot of time to read magazines, but when I do, I kind of like Field and Stream. Palinize that. Now, I think Paul Ryan is the best way to win, but I know that Ryan is the best way to lose. I think we're going to win this election. I really do. And if we do, Paul Ryan on the ticket means some form of the Ryan plan, and that means a mandate to get the spending under control. But if we lose, we need to lose with the Ryan plan, because if we lose, it will mean that America, unlike Wisconsin, has not yet faced up to the full scale of the mismanagement, greed, waste, and corruption that have bankrupted the richest nation in the history of the world. I'm not sure that a Romney-Ryan administration will be able to defuse this debt bomb, but I am utterly convinced that under Obama, too, that bomb will explode. We stand on the razor's edge, and the American people need to hear it, and they will hear it now. And if we are still a great people, we will do what the people of Wisconsin did. We'll follow belt-tightening plan, we'll take our medicine, and we'll start to get better. Or we'll do what Greece and France did a few months ago. We'll vote for pie. Everybody loves pie. Just keep the pie coming. When the pie stops coming and money has no value anymore, the American people will need to know that they had a choice, and they also need to know who was warning them and telling them to take their medicine, because then we will not have gotten away with a haircut and a bitter taste in our mouths. Then we'll be fighting for our lives, and that's when we will really need courageous, even-tempered, non-rockstar adults like Paul Ryan, and the courageous, even-tempered, non-rockstar adult like the man that chose him as his running mate.
I don't think you or anybody who's been watching me campaign would suggest that in any way, we have tried to divide the country. We've always tried to bring the country together.
The question in this election is, which way do we go? Do we go forward towards a new vision of an America in which prosperity is shared, or do we go backward to the same policies that got us into this mess in the first place?
We've always tried to bring the country together.
We're not trying to push financial reform because we begrudge success that's fairly earned. I mean, I do think at a certain point you've made enough money.
We've always tried to bring the country together.
It is important for me to go ahead and affirm that I think same-sex couples should be able to get married.
The private sector is doing fine.
We've always tried to bring the country together.
This month we're announcing the 2012 launch of African Americans for Obama.
We've always tried to bring the country together.
Visit Latinos.BarackObama.com to get involved today, because we are greater together. Estamos Unidos.
We've always tried to bring the country together.
This unbelievable American system that we had that allowed you to thrive. Somebody invested in roads and bridges. If you've got a business, you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen.
I don't think you or anybody who's been watching the campaign would suggest that in any way we have tried to divide the country. We've always tried to bring the country together.
Reese on the Radio is responsible for this ad.
It is 33 minutes after the hour. If you are looking at C-SPAN right now, you are watching Barack Obama's half-sister, Maya. I thought that his last name was different. I thought it was like Soweto. Satoro. Is it Satoro? Why did I always think it was different, guys? Is it me?
Is it?
Well, I can hear the guys. Are you there, guys?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah. Okay. So I've always thought, okay, Satoru is her last name?
Should be, yeah, because she was fathered by Lolo.
Yes, Lolo Satoru.
Lolo
now, why does she not look Indonesian?
Who knows? Pretended. Did Brandon Lee look half Chinese?
Well, this is also true. Now, is this Stanley's daughter?
Yeah, this would be Stanley Ann Durham and Lolo Sartoro's daughter.
Okay, now that I find interesting. Because I'm looking at her face, and I'm saying to myself, okay, she looks kind of black. Sartoro was,
Indonesian.
Lolo was kind of dark-skinned, wasn't he? Or was he a light-skinned Indonesian guy?
I don't know. Indonesians are, you know, there's so many different shades of Asian, it's hard to tell.
Right.
Could have used Richard Nixon's makeup artist.
But, I don't see her all that often in public life. Why is it that no one really interviews this girl?
And now that
you got a radio show, get off your dead ass instead of sitting on the couch all holidays and do it.
And like
Justin told me, all you did was sit in your ass all day and watch Fox.
I'm looking at a picture of Lolo Sotoro. He looks kind of like Indian, like light-skinned Texaco Indian.
Right.
And Michelle Obama's brother, now I see where she gets that ugly mouth from because he got it too.
Yeah, they definitely
look alike.
But
at least his head is big enough to hold that big-ass mouth. That is a big, ugly horse.
Yeah, they definitely look like brother and sister.
Oh, they
so, man, are the Republicans going to keep pushing this whole Ryan as a... Is a low
10
like
more seconds on this veteran.
Hold on. Dennis, real quick. What did you say, Mike?
Yeah, my problem.
Republicans
I heard
continue
your,
what?
I heard the bit from Bill Whittle where he's pushing Paul Ryan as this, you know, budget hawk, low spending guy. Do they really think nobody's going to check up on this?
Oh.
This guy has voted for over $1 trillion in spending.
Yeah, I'm almost certain that Biden is going to throw that at him. If anybody anybody believes that Joe Biden is going to get crushed at this one, vice presidential debate, they're greatly mistaken.
You don't think that Biden's going to get crushed?
No.
This is a nuclear bomb, man. He spent more than $1 trillion.
They won't be able to call him on that. You're absolutely right.
And here's the better one, okay? And I'll put it to you hypothetically. If we're trading with a country who artificially keeps its currency low, right, to have an unfair advantage with us in international trade, would you be in support of levying tariffs on that country to even the playing field for us?
Probably not, which is why a lot of people laugh at Donald Trump for that same subject. But
you would say that it's okay for a country to cheat and keep its currency artificially low to gain a manufacturing advantage over us when we can't compete?
No, what I'm saying is that, okay, first of all, we've got to change the rules when it comes to our trade with China. We've got to literally put an end to that idea that China can continue to manipulate its currency. But this tariff idea...
there's a solution. It's a tariff. Tariffs work. That's why the Japanese don't export small pickup trucks to us. You know that, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because we slapped a tariff on Japanese pickup trucks because they put a tariff on, like, imported chicken or something, and we still have it.
Here's the deal. The bottom line is that, look, it is not going to be a walk in the park for Paul Ryan during his one debate. They are going to have Biden prepared. The only worst enemy of a Biden vice presidential debate is Biden.
Yeah.
He's his own worst enemy. I don't think it's going to be a walk in the park unless this guy completely forgets what it is that he's supposed to do being Biden. What it is that he's supposed to do when he gets
there. It just baffled me because, you know, if you just Google Paul Ryan spending, it comes right up and shows you that this guy bucked his own party to spend money.
Yes, absolutely. And, of course, they're going to bring that up. And he's going to have to defend it. Paul Ryan, for that matter, is going to have to defend it. You know, whether or not he'll defend it well, I don't know. I mean, it remains to be seen to me. But I still defend it well. I mean, I really doubt that Paul Ryan's going to completely kick ass. But I do believe he'll win. I believe he'll win tonight. And who's debating that? Is that Martha Raddatz?
Who knows? There'll be some bleeding heart.
Because I know Candy Crowley is doing one, and Martha Raddatz is doing another.
You know what, Reese? Rahm was full of shit.
I wanted to talk about that. You listened to Rahm Emanuel's speech. What did you think?
Oh, well, he brought up, he made a big stink about General Motors, right, and how, President Obama made the tough choice to save GM. What he doesn't tell you is that it's cost us $25 billion as taxpayers so far. We've lost. GM stock is sitting at $20 a share now. For us to sell off at the break-even point, it's $53 a share. It's never going to hit 53.
But what got me is when he said the president reads letters from the American people.
Dennis,
as if he was the first one ever to do that. Reagan used to do that. They didn't make a big deal about it at the convention.
Two-thirds of General Motors employees are overseas.
Right.
GM took the bailout money we gave them, and instead of revitalizing production in Detroit, which is what I think the American people would like to see, GM is building plants in China. GM should have been allowed to be subject to the market forces that affect every other business. They should have been made to go bankrupt and renegotiate their contract with UAW.
Simple and plain. But it's funny that you mentioned that about the whole thing. What Rahm Emanuel said in that speech was, he said that all the experts were in the room. This is essentially what he said. All of the experts were in the room. They all said, Obama, leave it alone. It's literally going to fail. Okay? Leave it alone. Who did Obama, in Rahm Emanuel's own words, and I'm paraphrasing here, he ignored the experts he brought in and listened to the United Auto Workers.
Yeah, the reason that General Motors can't do like the Germans and the Japanese and the Koreans, who are building plants like crazy here in the South, GM can't do that because they're tied to UAW and they can't move to a right-to-work state.
Right, and that whole part, that whole point that he brings up is that he keeps talking about Obama making these decisions and ignoring the experts. And this is, again, and you just brought it up, Dennis, when you talked about him sitting there reading 10 letters a night and then coming down to the Oval Office pointing out that one letter to the people that said, this is who we're fighting for. Well, look, I don't want a president who reads one letter and decides policy based on it.
Well, the thing with General Motors is GM is screwed. You know, GM screwed themselves with these deals with UAW, but Ford's not this screwed. The reason Ford is not this screwed is because Ford made a good product for a long time, and General Motors screwed the American consumer for decades.
And again, why would you – in fact, another great point about Rahm Emanuel's speech is when you say that you're going to go to the people at General Motors and you're going to use them as the template to your policy to save that organization, in essence, the people who are supposed to be the brightest and the smartest people in the room are telling you, don't do it, this isn't a good move. Instead, you take the advice of the people who are responsible for its failure.
Well, look, man,
if you had 30 grand cash
on a car, would you buy a Chevy Malibu or a Toyota Camry?
Well, you buy a Toyota Camry. It's only the best-selling car in the country for the past 8 years.
I think it's made in Ohio.
The Ford F-150 is the best-selling all-around car for the past 8 years.
So I have no sympathy for those people at all. I mean, General Motors screwed themselves by making crappy products for a long time.
If you were going to build a car and you're sending it to Japan, where would you put the steering column? Wouldn't you put it
on the right?
Exactly in the country that has it in the proper side, left or right?
there's American cars that sell in Europe and Japan, but they're like the pinnacle of our company. They sell Corvettes there, they sell Mustangs there.
Right.
But you're not going to sell a Chevy Malibu there. Why?
But no, they don't sell a Chevy Malibu.
Yeah, but what GM did, they put the steering column on the American side, and the Japanese drive like the British. How the hell are you going to sell a car? Then they complain, the Japs aren't buying our cars. No shit, they're crazy.
Whoa. So hold on. Are you trying? Oh, because I never knew this, Dennis. So you're telling me that we sent the Japanese American cars with the steering column on the left?
Yes.
Stop lying.
Not only that, I guess they sent the Chevy Nova to Brazil. It didn't sell. I guess in Portuguese, Nova means doesn't drive, doesn't go at all. Who the hell was into marketing?
You know, it's funny how Toyota does so well in this country. For one reason, of course, because of the fact that you can expect a Toyota to do well over 200,000 miles before this car completely breaks down, for crying out loud. And even though it's made in the United States, it's still Japanese engineering and it still does well. This is the reason why it's the best-selling car in the country, or full-size sedan for that matter. The fact that Ford is doing as well as it does with its F-150 says one thing that I know that General Motors wasn't paying attention to, and that is the fact that when they decided that they wanted to make the car lighter, smaller, and more fuel efficient, that more and more Americans said, I'm not going to put my child in a car that's lighter and has, you know, and as far as they're concerned, the biggest safety feature is a frickin' airbag. And I read a statistic back in 2009 that said that for every 100 pounds you take off of a car, you put 7,500 lives at risk.
Well, yeah, but then how come Volvo and Saab are so safe? They're not big honking cars.
No. Volvo and Saab do the one thing the other cars are not doing, steel cages.
Mm-hmm.
And Volvo has prided itself on its steel cage since I was a kid. And I remember watching those commercials back in the day. Volvo always said, look at our steel cages. We're one of the only cars that still uses a steel cage around its framework. Other cars tried to do it, but what they couldn't do was they couldn't get the fuel efficiency. Because that's what these cars, like Hyundais, even though they're nice and sleek, the new models, that they're all sleek and everything, but the one thing that they do not have, and the reason why they have this fuel efficiency, is because they have to make it lighter. And they're reinforced. It's not reinforced steel. It's like a steel alloy that they're using
Reed,
now.
Can you straighten out something for me?
Sure.
The new factories that came in that were built by the foreign entrepreneurs, weren't they all built in right-to-work states?
Yeah.
Do you think that might have something to do with it, too?
Mercedes is in Alabama, BMW is in South Carolina, Volkswagen is opening one up in Tennessee, and the Asians are like Tennessee, Kentucky, places like that.
And look what this administration did to Boeing.
And there's a plant in Ohio that makes Acuras and I think Toyota Camrys. There's a 2-year waiting list to get a job there. People are dying to get those jobs.
Really?
So what does that tell you? And the Democrats are in North Carolina, a right-to-work state. Someone screwed up big time.
But you know what? No. Listen, that's going to change. North Carolina is going to change. I'm telling you, if this election really, really turns out the way that we truly believe, I'm almost certain that North Carolina becomes a red state. It's got to. I believe that North Carolinians have decided that, look, there's no way they can follow. And look at the governor who spoke today. Why am I forgetting this broad's name? This is the one who was upset about the gay vote that happened in North Carolina. We look like Mississippi, she says. She spoke today. She's not even running for re-election because she knows that state's changing because she's had an abysmal record. It's over for people for Democrats in North Carolina. Virginia's going to be the same thing, too. Whether people like it or not, Mitt Romney had a great line, I think it was just 2 days ago, when he said you can find those former Obama voters out there by the imprint of the old Yes We Can bumper stickers on their car. You know, the only place that I'm really, really scared of is Colorado. I think that he's going to win Colorado, and if there's anything that I believe right now, bottom line, Ohio I think is a shoo-in, but Colorado, that's an issue.
Well, yeah, I'll tell you the issue with Colorado. You see that Obama released his new like internal DNC campaign video with Cal Penn and John Cho, Harold and Kumar.
That's right, going for the stoner vote.
Right. Well, Colorado has legal medical marijuana. And Colorado stoners have seen what Obama's pulled in California. So I don't think they're locked up in his side either. Stoners are not stupid. They know what he's doing.
So wait. But now, see, because that's another argument, because I know there are a lot of people who are proponents of legalizing marijuana. I understand that you're one of them, Mike. This is one of the things that I've always had a concern about when it came to that ruling, the recent ruling in California, where they pretty much tell everybody, that's it, there's no more medical marijuana allowed. Because, of course, they were literally contradicting themselves, and they were saying people were allowed to buy medical marijuana or marijuana in California, but they were breaking federal law. And then, out of nowhere, the law was just completely changed, and now no one's allowed.
Well,
Colorado,
what LA did was LA was planning to get back to the original guys that got the permits when the law first passed. But the way I look at it, it's a state's rights issue. If the people of that state pass this law, the federal government has no business overriding them.
Interestingly enough,
we are a confederation of states, right? We're supposed to have states' rights.
Right, exactly. But remember, marijuana...
Or federal law.
That's the biggest problem here, is that federal law can supersede in issues that relate to drugs.
But then when Arizona enforces federal law, the states come in and say that Arizona has no business enforcing federal law.
Of course. And Mike, this is why it's set up the way it's set up. It's convenient, okay? The federalities let the states do whatever they want to do, okay? As far as marijuana goes, in California, they let them do whatever, okay, blah, blah, blah.
Isn't that due to prosecution?
Shit started to get out of hand. So
it cost the prison complex money, what it did.
You're absolutely right. I agree with that.
The feds get involved when they want to get involved, when it benefits them to get involved. They didn't just get involved just for nothing. Some shit went down, and they got involved because it was going to benefit them.
It was costing the lobbyists and the prison industry big money because no more people were having to buy weed on the street and going to jail.
Well, let me ask you this, because then I'll ask both of you this. So do you believe that a lobby like, let's say, the Corrections Officers Union, right? Let's say they lobby legislators and say, look, you guys are legalizing the state use of drugs or marijuana for that matter. That means that our numbers in our jails are lower. That means that we don't have staff. We don't need staff as much, so we've got to fire people. In other words, we're overstaffed, so to speak. So we have to fire people because funding coming from the state is being overdrawn, so to speak. So now you've got to change the law. Do you believe that, like, corrections or police?
Absolutely.
Do you believe that that's a possibility? Because I believe that's a strong possibility.
Possibility. I mean, how many cops are required just to harass people with marijuana?
Right. No, I look at California, and I always keep this link sitting on my computer. And it's this one link I always keep. It's the CCPOA, which is an organization in California. They're the ones who petitioned legislature in California to keep the three strikes rule. And this is the hold on, because I want to get the correct name of this group, because I read about them when I was the California Correctional Peace Officers Association. This is one of the largest correctional organizations in California, and their biggest argument is that, of course, they're a special interest group, because that's what they're referred to in this group. They're a special interest group that pretty much told legislatures, especially Democrats in California, the three strikes rule has to stand. That means that, of course, after three strikes, you stay in for 25 years?
Yeah, something like that. Long time.
Hold up. So you get caught
with three felonies. Three felonies.
What's a felony? What's a marijuana felony? Is it an intent to sell?
Intent to sell.
Is it, Joey? What do you have to have on you?
You guys are really bad.
I'm not trying to associate it with the marijuana thing, but listen to what I'm saying as far as like a union sort of conglomerate, a union lobbying group would do, is that this particular group that I'm talking about, what they did was they lobbied all of these congressional members or the state's legislatures. Listen, say, do not get rid of the three strikes rule because we need these people in prison to protect our jobs. Right.
Well, look, man, you want to know how out of control the federal government is? Do you know anything about industrial hemp?
Yeah.
You do? Okay. I don't know. I don't know much about
that. Now, if you go to your local health food store and walk around, you can find hemp protein and hemp bread and hemp oil.
Right.
They sell clothes made out of hemp. All these products are available on our market. But we can't grow hemp in this country. It's illegal. So all of the hemp that this stuff is made with comes from Canada. Hemp, a totally harmless, non-psychoactive product that happens to be in the same family as marijuana, is illegal for our farmers to grow. So we will continue to pay farmers not to grow corn and not to grow soybeans when they can grow this multi-billion-dollar crop that is not marijuana. And the federal government says no, even though we grew it and paid farmers to grow it in World War II.
Well, okay, can hemp be used as a drug?
No, there's no THC in hemp.
No,
none.
The way it's grown in a totally different way. It's not.
Yeah.
Is it grown like marijuana?
It looks like marijuana, but it's not marijuana.
Okay, because I apologize for being naive here. Again, I am not a part of the drug culture.
Yeah, one of these northeastern states, I'm thinking New Hampshire, Vermont, one of the two, passed a state law that said their farmers could grow hemp, and the federal government came in and said, no, you can't grow it.
This was back before 2008. I'm almost certain this was like 2006, 2007.
Yeah, so it's like just, you know, forget that industry. So if I want to get hemp bread, which is pretty damn good, I can buy all the hemp bread I want. It just can't be grown here.
Mike, how big is that industry, though? Like, I'm familiar with the industry, but how big is it?
Oh, God, I'd say it's got to be in the hundreds of millions, if not billions.
Okay, because,
really?
All right, listen.
Because I know that there's products out there. I know you can get things online. I've, you know, seen that. But, is that stuff in retailers somewhere?
Right. Sure. Here's a better question, Mike, and going right into what Mary's asking. Okay, so I saw a report today that the annual sale of organic food is at $26 billion. From $10 billion back in 1996.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Is it comparative?
I'll find out in a second.
Because, I mean, I didn't know that. I mean, because
is that grew $16 billion?
Yeah, it literally. When I saw
did
that
you
today.
Say billion?
Yes, I said billion. It started at
people
10.
People are spending $26
billion on organic food
in
this country.
Go.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. The numbers for global hemp production, global amount of money for global hemp product was $150 million in 2002. That's the most recent number to have. And I know there's a lot more now. $250 million 10 years ago. So it's stupid. I mean, there's no reason not to grow it. The reason that hemp is illegal actually goes back to after World War II, when the petrochemical industry came up with nylon rope. Because all the ropes we used on battleships in World War II were hemp.
That's right.
When the petrochemical industry came up with nylon rope, they leaned on Congress and wrote some checks, and Congress suddenly made hemp illegal.
And nylon ropes, maybe it's cheaper to make, I don't know, whatever, but that it's not good for the environment.
And it's not as good a product. I mean, hemp rope is ridiculously strong and lasts forever.
It's very strong.
Yeah. Well, it's crazy. And if you want to kick back to the marijuana thing, the conservative numbers on it is if we legalize marijuana, it would save us $32 billion a year just in enforcement and incarceration. That's not counting the money we would make from selling the product.
Wow.
So, do we need money in this country or do we not?
Hey, does hemp clothing still sell very well?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I have some hemp stuff. It's fantastic. I have a pair of hemp shorts I've had for 10 years. It looked like
now, see, I always thought hemp was like this sort of very abrasive sort of
like,
material.
Kind of like a, you think of it kind of like a corn husk.
Yeah.
No,
I,
you gotta look. It's kind of like a, it's kind of like a thicker linen, because
linen
is kind of made from flax, so it's kind of similar. Yeah, hemp is pretty good.
A thick, yeah, okay, you know what, I'm pretty sure that I've felt it before, it is like a thicker linen, but it's a little abrasive.
Yeah, see, I always thought it was abrasive. I remember feeling it, like, when I was a kid. I mean, I remember a guy had a poncho.
The stuff I have is good, man. It feels like kind of a linen cotton cross. It's great.
Yeah.
But the point is, there's no reason for it to be illegal. It's just the government getting in the way of business.
Is Mary right when she said it sort of feels like a potato sack? Is that kind of accurate?
No, man. It's, you know, you look at it like wool. There's different qualities of wool. You can get really, really scratchy wool, or you can get really fine merino wool that feels like cashmere.
Okay,
really,
that's
good,
like,
hemp,
okay,
like that.
You buy sheets and you get, comes in like 250 per account, 400 per account, 800 per account.
The hemp stuff that like the deadheads wear is kind of like burlap sackish, but really good quality hemp clothing is like any other clothing, except it lasts forever.
Okay. All right, well, we've gone over our time. Thank you, Mike, as always, man. You are a plethora of information. I always love it when you're on the show. And you know what? Stop forgetting. Tomorrow, okay, without a shadow of a doubt, remind me 9:30. Okay, we are doing a segment.
We haven't done it.
Remember.
Mike, you always bring up
Mike, listen, here is your intro. I want everybody to hear it. This is your intro. We are going to come out of commercial break when you hear it, okay? And you know that you are up. We're going to do it at 9:30 tomorrow. Hold on, let me find it, because I'm all stuck here trying to find out where it is.
Out.
No, we're not going to get kicked out. We never get kicked out. Let me just find your intro here, because it's important that you hear it, because I think you'll love it, and I told you that we had it, so I want to make sure that you get to hear it. Here is your intro for your segment, we're just going to call it what the title of this song is. And we'll leave you so you can hear it. That's our show for tonight. We'll see you tomorrow. Same bat time, same bat channel. This is Mike's intro tomorrow at 9:30 for what we call Jigaboo Time.
When you sign across the line, it's Jigaboo time. It's Jigaboo
time. It's Jigaboo time.
So when you're running out of lyrics, it's
Jigaboo
time. It's
Jigaboo
time. It's
Jigaboo
time.
So when you rap for the money,
it's Jigaboo time.
It's Jigaboo time.
It's Jigaboo time. When you don't have a plan,
it's Jigaboo time. It's Jigaboo time. It's Jigaboo time.
You're rapping for the white man.
Just a little bit.
Get out.
Real ghetto. Okay, we'll shoot the video over here. We need a like a street area. You know, where's some shit with the whole thing? Where you gonna stay?